And this is going to be about what type of practice is right for you. There's lots of exhibits out here. You're learning about these different things. And we've got a really nice panel here that's going to help us kind of work through this. So down here, you guys have all met Dr. Sullivan. He's representing a small community group. Dr. Ward is going to be representing hospital employee. Dr. Hafner from Peoria is going to be representing an academic group. Dr. Mistry is the chairman at Christ Hospital, so he's going to be representing sort of a larger community group. And then Dr. Proust is the assistant medical director, who's also representing smaller community groups. So I think we'll have each of them give just a really brief statement and then probably use the majority of the time for questions, right? I'm starting with Dr. Proust.
Hi.
Can you hear me now? So, I've been an emergency room physician for a long time. I started out as a hospital employee, so I do have a little bit of perspective on that for 17 years, and the last 10 years I've been with a smaller community group at Donner Hospital. Kind of fell into that. I made a change in my career because I just needed to take a step back. I just fell into a great group. But I learned quite a bit in the last 10 years in terms of group dynamics, how the group is integrated within the hospital administration. Internally, what is our group? Are we equal partners? How do we become partners? When we started out, we were unequal partners, and within the last 4 to 5 years, we've worked toward becoming all equal partners and developed a partnership track. So there's a lot of different perspectives that you must take into account when you're looking to become part of the small hospital group. How long they've been there, the finances of the group, can you look at their books, what's the track to become a partner, how can I get involved within the group and within the hospital administration. So all real good viable questions. Hopefully I can help provide some input.
Dr. Mistry, any questions?
So I'd agree with everything that was just stated. I am a PGY16, and we'll continue to add those numbers up as time goes on. My background, and then just a really quick story to follow up on one of the cases that you talked about. Up until very recently, I was chair of emergency medicine at Christ, and at Christ, we were initially hospital employees and then part of a large medical group called Advocate Medical Group. My new role is no longer as chair of emergency medicine at Christ, but I'm the system medical director for emergency medicine for Advocate Medical Group. So we deal with many different hospitals and many different scenarios there. So certainly the background fits for a large community group as well. Quick story, the one you gave about the father beating the child in front of you, I had a similar situation, not quite exactly the same, but close enough. And I did call DCFS, and the father was not very happy and threatened to sue me, and he made good on his threat. He got a lawsuit, got the paper delivered to me, and after having to go change my shorts, took a close look at it and called our lawyers. And I actually saved the lawyer's response to the plaintiff's lawyer. And I'm paraphrasing, but it goes something like this. Thank you, we received your notice. Just wondering, what law school did you go to? Do you know what a mandated reporter is? Dr. Mistry was doing his job, so basically, bring it on.
Yeah.
He didn't go any further than that, and we should kind of send a copy of the state statutes to the plaintiff's lawyer. So try to do the right thing, and that will always hold you in good course.
Dr. Hafner.
Hi, I'm John Hafner. I got a chance to meet and talk with most of you. I work at OSF St. Francis Medical Center in Peoria. We are an academic medical center. We're affiliated with the University of Illinois College of Medicine at Peoria. A little unique and different than many academic centers in that I'm also a hospital employee, so you know, I hear that over and over again. That's become a fairly popular model. But I work in various roles within the academic world. I've served as an assistant program director. I serve currently as the research director, and I am core faculty with there. So some of the teaching roles that we have with both medical students and residents. So you have all gotten a chance to see for the past 3 years, or will have the chance to see for the next 3 years, depending on where you're at with your training, how academic medicine works and some of the really great role models that you may have had and will continue to have. So in some ways, being in an academic position is sort of one of the easier ways to see what you want to do, because you sort of know the job before you maybe even get it. However, there's a lot of subtleties to that, and how things are paid or reimbursed and how you move up through the academic world, which are a little bit trickier than maybe in the community world or the hospital employee mold or perhaps an independent provider. Things are clinical, acumen, the clinical parameters are very important, but other things are important too, like grants and contracts and teaching and evaluation and papers and presentations and all kinds of things like that. So that tends to be a little bit more heavily weighted at times in large institutions than perhaps clinical parameters are at times. So it tends to be a safe place financially generally, but it tends to not pay quite as well as community or democratic groups. But it also has a lot more flexibility and time and the way things are done, so there's release time for you to do all these activities as well. So I'd love to help you answer any questions you may have about that.
All right, can you hear me? I'm on. So again, my name is Ed Ward. My current job is at Rush University Medical Center, so I am a hospital employee, and there's a lot of overlap in what we do because we're also academic. What I can tell you is, to my knowledge, I still hold the record for most moonlighting as a resident in 5 years that without getting in trouble or getting hurting anybody or getting caught, right? So and when I was a resident, you know, it was a 5-year program, so I moonlighted the last 2 years, and I actually worked with Art out at Delmar years ago. Anyway, when I was making my decision as to what type of practice I wanted to get into, I had some experience with being an independent contractor, and there's nothing like getting a great big fat check, and that's really sweet, right? But then when you talk to your tax person, like, okay, well, that's really not your money. You gotta do it. So it's like, what do you have the check? It's my money. So the way I made my decision for where I wanted to work was I just decided, look, I don't want to work in a hospital I wouldn't feel comfortable bringing my own family to. And I've been out in like a real small community hospital, single coverage, where somebody comes in sick and your only option is really call a helicopter to get them out of there, right? So I've done that, and I didn't feel comfortable doing that. So what I decided was I want to work at a big academic place that has lots and lots of resources, and Rush has tons and tons of resources. The thing that we're very lucky about in Illinois in particular, in Chicago especially, is there's a lot of really good hospitals with excellent reputations that have lots and lots of resources. So as a hospital employee, I mean, I like the fact that I get a paycheck and it comes every 2 weeks and I know what I'm gonna get before I get it. I don't have to worry, I mean, I don't think I have to worry about losing a contract, right? So plenty of my classmates have had to go through and decisions are made outside of their control, and the next thing you know, you've got a couple months before you gotta leave and you gotta go somewhere else, right? So I feel very comfortable that that I'm gonna stay employed with Rush for as long as for as long as my group is there. I don't live with that kind of fear. And again, the other thing by picking a very large hospital is I've got a chance to teach medical students, nursing students. I can do research. You know, more and more of my time is getting sucked up in administration. You know the reward for being a person who says yes is they ask me to do more stuff. And you know, emergency medicine in general doesn't say no. So you find yourself all of a sudden getting sucked up into, you know, taking on different problems, because we solve problems all the time. It's a good talent set to have. So anyway, that's my bit about employee medicine.
Okay, so I'm kind of unique in that I work in a rural setting. Like, I work in a community hospital that sees 10,000 patients a year. I work in a suburban hospital that sees 40,000 patients a year. And I work in an inner city hospital that sees 60,000 patients a year. So I can give perspective from each one, and the practices are completely different for a lot of reasons. So employee, and it goes back to what I was talking about before in my lecture about what your needs and what your wants are. And part of what you guys are gonna have to figure out before you graduate is what your needs and what your wants really are. And a lot of you may want to say, I want to stick with academics and teach other residents, which is great. That's something you put on your list. Maybe you say, I want to make a lot of money, and then maybe if that's the case, maybe you're not going to want to work in an academic center because notoriously they pay a little bit less. There's also an issue with, like Ed was mentioning, about independent contractor versus employee. You do make more money. You make more money as an independent contractor, and it's nice to get that check, but then every quarter you got to pay out you know, pretty much a third of that back to the government. And if you don't plan ahead, you're going to end up behind the eight ball. So that's another thing to consider. Just in terms of the practices too, when you work at a smaller hospital, the attendings are a lot more territorial about their patients. And one of the stories that when I first, I was a director at a small hospital for 8 years, and I stopped being the director just because the administration at the hospital changed and it didn't realign with what my wants were. And so I actually cut back. I took about a 30% pay cut, and I enjoy my life a lot more. I spend a lot more time with my kids. I don't spend as much time in the ER. I make less money. We're not destitute, but I spend a lot more time with my kids, and I work like one weekend day a month. And that's just my wants. So and the nice thing about emergency medicine, you can decide to do that. You can run yourself ragged and make a lot of money, or you can take it easy and still make a good living and spend a lot of time with your family. So, but in terms of the contrasts, one of the things when I work at UIC and you get a patient that comes in who has pancreatitis, and you call up the surgeon, he'll say, oh no, I don't do pancreatitis. Call up hepatology. You call a hepatologist, they'll say, no, this isn't a hepatology case. You got to call GI. And you call GI and say, we don't admit pancreatitis. Call medicine on call. And finally, call medicine. Like, no. You got to call surgery back. I'm like, I'm not calling surgery. Come down and see the patient now. And so I tell this to doctors, the surgeons at the small rural hospital. Like, are you nuts, man? If somebody tried to give my patient away, I would be all over the director's back the next morning. So it's like there's a big difference between, just in the practice pattern, between one hospital and the other. So I guess the advice I'd have for you guys would be, before you get out and actually start looking for contracts, is to moonlight a little bit and spend a little time in a rural hospital, or spend a little time in a suburban hospital. Just get outside of your comfort zone to see what you like and what you don't like, because that's the only way you're really going to figure out what your needs and what your wants are. So.
So we're going to throw this open to questions. I'll just kind of start with one fairly generic one. Since we're on the topic of what practice setting is best for you, I think the thing that I would ask all of these gentlemen is within that framework of the practice setting that's best for you, what about your practice setting do you find the most rewarding, and are you most glad that you have? Because I think we can all agree that if you're here on this panel, you probably enjoy the clinical work. So what about the setting do you find to be the most beneficial and rewarding?
So I'll go first. For me, the Christ was my dream job when I came out of residency, and the big part of it, the thing that was important for me, was working with residents, working in that sort of environment. And as was mentioned a few times, you will take a pay cut to do it. My advice is figure out what's important to you. Don't chase the dollar. A few years down the line, the money's not going to be enough to keep you happy. One place or the other, it's that environment. Is it what you want? And chances are, or some people are going to be wrong about their initial thoughts. But figure out what's important to you and try to find an environment that fits them. So for me, at Christ, it was working with residents, and then it was just working in that sort of insane, busy, crazy environment. So
One quick, when you're becoming it, if you are an independent contractor, you definitely want to have a good accountant, because you don't want to have, true story, your accountant tell you your first year out, are you sitting down? Because I didn't pay enough in. So you never want to hear that statement, are you sitting down here? But to answer.
From an accountant or an attorney.
Yeah, exactly. yeah.
Or your chairman.
Family member, yeah. So after 27 years, my wants and needs changed a little bit. When I first came out of residency, I didn't want academic. I thought I might. I'd moonlighted a little bit at Masonic. Really wasn't my cup of tea to be trying to move patients through and teach residents and at the same time and medical students. I did enjoy it, but found that I wanted to be in a community setting, and I had the opportunity in Rockford to started a trauma program. I love trauma. I got involved with trauma, and then I picked up more administrative roles. Like Ed says, if you happen to say yes, you will get sucked into doing more and more things. And I really, truly enjoyed my time there. But as I got older and more into my career, I found what I was really
leaning toward where I really wanted to be was part of a community. And in a community hospital, the thing to answer Matthew's question is that the most satisfying part is being part of the community that you take care of. Many of the patients that I see, I wind up seeing on the street, in the restaurant, somewhere. And it's just very rewarding to be part of the community and taking care of part of that community and trying to improve the healthcare within that community. But I think sometimes your wants and needs change as time goes on with your career.
So I'm going to jump in. The thing I like the most about where I work right now is our culture and kind of the respect that I get as a member of the medical staff. At one of my previous jobs, I used to get yelled at all the time. I mean, I get yelled at on the phone. How dare you do this to my patient? How could you have not done that to my patient? Why didn't you call me? It was really getting to be, you know, too much. So when I was looking to come to Rush, one of my classmates, Steve Trezak, he's big in sepsis workup, you may have heard of him. He was my intern, great intern. He was at Rush doing a year in critical care. So they had this deal where you could do, you know, we did internal medicine, emergency medicine, there was a year you could do 1 year and then get triple board certified. He did that, so he was there. And I explained this to him. I said, look, I'm tired of just getting treated poorly. I really feel like I'm getting treated poorly. And he says, no, don't worry about it. That doesn't happen here. He says, well, you know, there is this one guy here, but no, for the most part, it's really fantastic. Don't worry about it. So 2 weeks into my job, I get a 28-year-old guy with the worst sarcoid I've ever seen. He was just going down the tubes, and nothing was going to solve him. So I saved him, so I had to go and intubate the guy. I tried to get a hold of his attending, but the attending was giving a lecture somewhere, so I couldn't get a hold of him. Go ahead, piece of cake, intubation. It's like what you're talking about, man. The technical part was no problem. Intubate the guy, we got him on there. I was going to get a gas to maybe do a little bit of vent management. This guy comes in and pulls me aside and says, are you Ward? I'm like, yeah, I'm Dr. Ward. And I had my gray coat on, so at Rush we wore white coats. I didn't even get my new coats, right? So I had my gray coat for my last job. So he starts ripping into me. He's like, how could you do this? I'm never going to get this guy to the vent. You should have been DNR. And I'm like, wait a second, hold on. You're his doctor. Why didn't you make him DNR? I don't understand. I just did the best I could to save this guy's life. And then it hit me. I'm like, you're the guy. You're the guy that Steve was talking about, right? And this guy lasted 6 more months at Rush before he was gone, right? So we kind of have a culture there. And again, I'm trying to keep this free of advertising purposes. But the bottom line is I work at a place where you know, people respect each other and we demand excellence from each other. And that could be in any different setting. But, you know, you all should find a place to work where you get the same type of respect and just an excellent place where you feel comfortable bringing your own wife or kid or family member. And that's what I like the most about our work.
Okay, but community in the hospital itself is very important. Maybe it's if you go to work and you think, God, I hope I don't have to work with this person. I don't have to work. You've got a list of people that you don't want to work with. It's probably not the right fit for you, and it's not a bad thing if you admit that and say, you know what, I got to find someone who's a better fit. That's something that's going to make you happy, and it's probably going to make the people at the hospital happy. Because if you're that frustrated with so many people at the hospital, chances are at least a few of them are frustrated with you. So part of making emergency medicine rewarding is finding the place, not only the community itself, like the outer community, but also the emergency department community that's a right fit for you. One of the places I work, everybody knows everybody's birthday, they know everybody's wives, they'll call up. I mean, we'll text each other on the phone, just like funny stories or funny pictures or something. So it ends up being, you end up becoming friends with the people you work with. And that's the most rewarding part of work, is when you actually go to work and it's like, hey, I'm glad to be going to work. It's not, gosh, I got to wake up and get to work. And it's something that a lot of times you fall into. It's not something you can seek out. It's something you develop. So just a story to contrast Art's story about wanting to be in the community. I mentioned before, I don't like being in the community I work at. My wife is a family practice doctor, and her office is like 3 miles from our house. And my son wrestles a lot. So we were out at a wrestling match one day with my son, and we're sitting in the bleachers, and some lady sits down next to her, and she keeps looking at my wife, and my wife looks at her, and she's like, you know, I know you from somewhere. I'm sorry, I don't know where I know you from. She goes, oh, I was one of your patients once. She goes, oh, well, that's nice. She goes, yeah, you turned me into DCFS for beating my kid. And my wife's like, oh. I'm going to go to the bathroom, but I'll be right back. And so I'm just the guy sitting in the jeans and the t-shirt, sitting there like, hey, can you believe her? I get a text message on my phone like 3 minutes later. She's like, I'm sitting across the gym. Come over here. Stop sitting there. So I don't want to be that person. And she goes to She goes to the grocery store, and it takes her three times as long to get grocery shopping done because people are lifting up their shirts saying, what does that look like? And can you refill my prescription? So it's nice to be wanted, but there's also a downside to that. So just compare and contrast something for food for thought.
As far as academic environment goes, I think the best part about the job really is always being able to work with a constant stream of new faces and new interesting residents and medical students. So, it's absolutely true about the November story. I remember that, you don't realize how much camaraderie and how much of a culture you're in right now because you're really in the culmination. This is the best time, really, of your career. I mean, you're learning and you're really doing things, and everybody says residency is horrible and I'm gonna wait till I get out of residency. Well, it's pretty anticlimactic when you get out of residency. And it's pretty lonely, depending on where you work. You may be the only doc, and you may not see your partners for a long, long time. So it might just be you driving in, working, and driving home. And depending on your, who you know and who you hang out with, you may be the only physician and not have a lot of people that understand. So academics and working in an academic milieu is really rewarding from the standpoint that you really get a chance to work with young people who are excited and want to know what your craft is all about and understand. And we really got excited when we had our third years come through here. So the M3s, are wonderful because they don't even know anything about anything. They're just happy to be there, right? So tell them to go do CPR. It's like their whole day.
They're
like, oh my gosh, look what happened today. He's just drunk. But I think you need to have something that keeps you going besides just your clinical. So maybe that's EMS, maybe that's being on a QA quality thing at your hospital. Maybe it's something outside of medicine that really keeps you going. But you have to, we're very goal-driven physicians and we are very achievement-oriented physicians. Everybody in this room, top of their class, very good board scores. You don't get into good residency programs on a whim. So, just doing nothing afterwards is gonna burn you out on the process. So make sure you keep yourself vital wherever you end up doing whatever. Just do something that challenges you and keeps you passionate.
Any questions from the audience? I will repeat them. They're audible now. Then I will.
I've got just one comment then, since you guys are not participating. A couple years ago, Dino Romero, past president for ISA, put together a lecture that looked at, what is it for like an academic medicine job, what is it for an independent contractor, what is it small community, and kind of had this nice diagram up to talk about, if you go and, I get the emails, come and work $250,000 an hour, or $250 an hour down in wherever, and you look at this stuff and think, oh my God, that's a tremendous amount of dough. How would I even consider working for half as much money at, in an academic place or somewhere different? And you really got to get into the details of it. So how much do they take away for your benefits? How much? What else do you have to pay for? What are your laws in Texas? I mean, honestly, I'm not as good of a consumer as I should be, Matt. I'll be getting on the website too that you mentioned just because. But when you really look at it, there's not on the one hand, at the end of the year, you're going to make more money doing an independent contractor working a ton of shifts. Okay, no doubt about that. But what you got to balance that with is, again, what's your needs? If you've got tons of debt, okay, I mean, if you have all kinds of debt from undergrad, from medical school, and then it's been percolating for 4 or 5 years as a resident, I get it. You got to go and you got to start knocking that down. There is that pressure. But what I can tell you, I think from experience, is that the difference is thousands, maybe tens of thousands of dollars, right, in bottom line, but you can't compare it to how happy you're gonna feel if you find something you really enjoy, right? A buddy of mine went to Yale for undergrad, but then another medical school for medical school, and had tons and tons of dough, went down to Florida, was making a mint. He was working two jobs in Florida making a mint just to knock this thing down. Now, I don't know if that was the cause of his divorce. I don't know if that was the cause of some of the unhappiness he went through. But, look, if there's only so many hours in a day, eventually these debts are going to get paid off, right? No matter what happens in our economy, there's always going to be sick people, and there's always going to be a need for smart people who are going to be able to go take care of them. So please be mindful of units of happiness versus dollars. There has to be a happy medium based on your own situation.
I think that we've sort of been appreciating these anecdotes, and we've got a lot of different practice styles here. Can anybody come up with an anecdote that maybe illustrates something uniquely challenging about the practice environment where you are? Dr. Ward kind of talked about that really complicated patient and the input from their doctor. Anybody else have any stories about something that's been uniquely challenging about your practice environment? Putting you on the spot there.
Me?
No.
Okay. I already
want to
say it.
The panel. Yeah, Ward is off the
hook. Yeah. I mean, I can give an example from a rural standpoint. It gets difficult. I don't remember who had mentioned it before, but you want to be the person. It was you. You were saying you want all these people to come to you working in an academic center. When you work in a rural center, you're it. I mean, in fact, a lot of times the docs are coming to you and saying, "What should I do with this patient? What should I do with this patient?" So you're kind of the last stop, and it's either you're taking care of them or you're flying them out. But if somebody needs like a central line, or if they need to cut down, or whatever it is that they need to have done, you're the one doing it. And sometimes it becomes very difficult because you've got docs that have known patients and their families for 10 and 20 years who are in there with the families themselves, and they're just, if there's a critically ill patient, they know it's either Sullivan's fixing him or this patient's going to die. It puts a lot of pressure on you sometimes to know that you're the only one there. And yeah, you can call for a helicopter. The helicopter's not going to get there for an hour, and you've got to try to keep this patient alive. It can be very emotionally draining when you've got like a hall full of patients or a hall full of family members that are all sitting there, because word gets around fast in a small community when there's somebody that's very ill, and everybody comes to the emergency department. So you've got a hall full of people, you've got somebody that's critically ill, you're trying to do everything you can, and you know you don't have all the stuff there to do it. Sometimes it gets very tight. It's not only just mentally challenging, but it can get emotionally very draining to say, I'm doing the best I can, you guys please just bear with me, we're trying to take care of them the best you can. Especially if you find out later that a patient died that you were taking care of. And maybe it's nothing that you did wrong, but it can be very difficult to then go later and you see somebody in the emergency department 6 months later, and it's like, oh yeah, you were the one that took care of so-and-so. Yeah, you touched him last. So whereas in a university setting, they may say, I don't want to go to this hospital. Like I remember when I was in my residency, they'd say, oh, I'm not going to that hospital, it's St. Death. But it was the hospital's reputation. It wasn't the people that remembered you. It was people that remembered, I'm not going to that hospital. So that may be one unique difference between the different practice environments.
I think I'm supposed to talk about academics. I mean, I have a lot in common with a lot of these guys, but I would agree with all of it on the political side. I think from the academic side, if you do academics, one of the things that's very challenging is that you, depending if you do fellowship or whatnot, the clinical side of things actually can be some of the easier things that you do all day. Getting out and having to produce something scholarly, some sort of clinically relevant, or solve some sort of problem, is not necessarily something we've all been trained in. It's not in our wheelhouse all the time. So there's a ramp-up period, and maybe somebody says, in the academic center, you really got to start publishing some papers, or you really got to start doing something. Maybe you've written a paper, maybe you haven't. Maybe you've served on some hospital committees, maybe you haven't. But that tends to be something that has a little bit of a steeper learning curve if you haven't maybe done a chief year or done some fellowship training or something like that. So I think that that's a fairly challenging area.
I have a couple questions. How many are thinking of going into community practice? How many have had difficulty with surgeons in your career so far? Alright. So when you're in a community practice and you have a trauma patient and you happen to be labeled as a level 2 trauma center, and you have these general surgeons who are taking trauma call, who are actually getting paid to get trauma call, but still have their priority as their private practice, convincing them that you have a sick trauma patient and to come in and take care of them is going to be probably one of your most unique challenges you'll have. And that's something you have to consider when you are, in a community practice at a level 2 trauma center, which many of the suburban hospitals out here are. And they have general surgeons who take trauma call, and they're taking trauma call not at your facility, but at one or two other facilities, and then they're always trying to scramble to get coverage. and convincing them at 2 in the morning when they've got an OR time at 7 a.m. that you got a sick kid that was, you know, ejected from the car and he's, you know, vitals are okay, but you're going to pan scan him, and he's telling you, well, call me after the CT scan, you know. So you have to, you're going to have those, that's going to be probably one of your most difficult challenges.
I think the any challenge of any of our environments is going to be that if that's the only environment in which you work, that will become in some ways subtle, in some ways not so subtle, that'll become your worldview. And it limits your understanding of how emergency medicine is and can be practiced. So if you join a community practice or an academic practice, keep in mind that that's not everything that's out there. It's, the examples may be easiest in a teaching environment where you, if that's your only way that you work, you, that becomes your normal. And you miss out on things that you may get in a more traditional community-based place. For years, we have encouraged RD doctors to work not only in our community-based teaching environment, but also in a true community practice environment where they are the doc, where you get to do all the procedures. I don't get an airway when I work in the ED unless at least one other person has tried. Usually two other people have tried. So by the time I get to it, I know it's hard because I know our residents. And then two, it's kind of a mess because multiple people have tried. I don't get the easy stuff anymore. And that's just the reality of working in a teaching environment. In a community-based practice, it's a different sort of a way of interacting, a different way of working. So any limitation of any single environment you're working is going to be that. So I strongly encourage all of you who are thinking about it, find what's important to you. Understand you may or may not be correct on that, but don't limit yourself to only one thing. There's a lot of value in experiencing different things. Think you like teaching? Absolutely, go for that. But consider also getting some time in a community environment. And the opposite is true too, if that's at all in your interest base.
We have a few minutes here. Any burning questions come up?
I have a question. So Mark Mackey, it's a board of directors. I've done most of what these guys have described. I have a ton of horror stories, but fond memories of how people got me engaged in things outside of clinical medicine. Which, first of all, I would agree that the best thing you can do for your career is learn how to take really good care of patients. And you have to have some experience in doing that. So coming out, you know, at some point in your career, you really just have to calm that down. So you can walk into a room with the moral authority that you have. You know how to take care of patients. And if you take care of anybody, you walk. But my own experience has been, and I'm curious what the panel would think, is that often these times, you know, particularly with the cynicism surrounding, you know, who I'm working for and my pay, is half of the time I find that most of the things that lead to compensation is that you basically have to do it for free. And so somebody asks you to do something, somebody might say, about saying yes. I'd just be curious, and that's been very true for me in my career, which is you can't always ask what's in it for me when you do something. I'm wondering if that's
from anything panel. And I just need to repeat for the video, if you don't mind. I think to summarize Dr. Mackey's question is saying that involvement with other things has its own set of challenges, and could the people on the panel speak to their experiences with that in their different settings? Is that a fair representation?
Yeah, and just how they got involved in it, and it's not always a linear process.
So the events leading up to their involvement in whatever they're involved in.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think just like there's danger by saying yes to everything, there's also a danger by saying no. Okay, so sometimes doors open in ways that you don't realize how they're going to open. And 5 years from now, you may be doing something very different than you're doing right now. And it all stems down to this committee or something that you decided to serve on. It's important for your hospital and for your specialty and for yourself to get involved into something in your profession, whether that happens to be committee work or whether it has to be research or academic or clinical committees or what have you. But I know that there's been plenty of times that I ended up in a very different spot than I started, and it all happened because I said yes to serve in some capacity that I didn't really think about very much. And it's amazing how that happens. But so while there's danger in saying yes, I think also you have to realize that you should say yes to some things and you should keep an open mind about things.
I would agree with that too. Keep your doors open. You never know where you're going to wind up. at the same time, there is some danger in saying yes if you're overextending yourself and if it's compromising, you know, things that are important to you, such as with your family. But for the most part, by saying yes and becoming involved and becoming passionate with what you're doing lead you down some paths that you wouldn't have expected from yourself, and you'll find yourself growing and appreciating it. I mean, I started with ITLS thinking I have to help teach paramedics in Rockford, and I joined the committee 20 years ago, and now I'm the chair of ITLS for Illinois. So never expected that to happen for me, but it's been a rewarding experience. Just one small example.
So physicians and non-physician administrators think in very different ways, and to go into that would be a two-hour talk in and of itself. As a general statement, I believe it to be true, it's been my experience, and it's true that most hospitals, most groups want physician involvement in things. But it takes you as a physician to extend yourself to say, yes, that's something I'm interested in. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it because I think it's the right thing. You may or may not be compensated for that, but quite frankly, none of the people who are here, none of your faculty members, are doing it because they're being compensated hour for the work they put in. It's not what people are interested in. You shouldn't be taken advantage of, and you have to watch out for that. But you do have to put yourself out there, and if you do want to get involved in something, if you let that be known to your medical director or your chair, wherever you're working, they will find something for you to do. Trust me, they will find something for you to do that fits your interest. But the only way to do it is to be proactive about it and understand that there may be some remuneration that comes down the line, but don't go into it with the thought of, if you give me this, then I'll do that. That's a non-starter for most environments. But if you're interested in doing things, there's a whole world of opportunity out there.
So I kind of got suckered into this whole thing. I was a brand new attending, and one of my senior attendings in the group I joined said, "Hey, you're double boarded. That's pretty cool. You know, you should think about joining ISEP because we need some help. We do this kind of written board review thing. Maybe you'd be interested in being on the committee." And I was just trying to be polite. And I didn't want to say no, so I said, "A committee, sure." And I'm thinking, I'd go to a meeting. Anybody go to a meeting? That's easy, right? So I showed up to the meeting, and they said, "Oh, you're Ed Ward, fantastic. So look, here's what we got. Here's a slide carousel. We need you to do 2 hours of cardiac arrhythmias, and then you're going to repeat it. So it's 6 to 8, and then you're going to repeat it 8 to 10. And the audience is people who are resitting for the boards, maybe the first, second, third, or fourth time. So thank you very much." Like, oh my God, I'm not even board certified, right? And this is the most rabid audience you've ever imagined, because they don't pass this test, they can lose their job. So I tried to weasel my way out of it, and they said, no, board certification is really not a requirement to give a lecture. So you're correct, you're going to be fine. But I'll tell you, as hard as that was, I'm so much more comfortable now speaking publicly than I ever was before, right? So I did that for 10 years. And again, I think the go with Matt talked about earlier, or other people, it was lonely. You get out, and I remember going from, hey, this month I'm going to do peds ICU, and the next month is trauma. Then I got an ID month, and you look at your schedule, it's like, this is some really cool stuff to do. But once you get out, it's like, well, this month I'm in that emergency department, and next month I'm in that emergency department. It's like, really? And all your friends are elsewhere, and you're sure now that they got cooler jobs than you got, right? So anyway, I was find myself surrounded by some of the best attendings that I got to work with when I was a resident. They were all involved in ISEP. And the joke was U of ISEP. I've never heard that before, right? U of ISEP. But I got to meet a whole bunch of other folks and had a lot more opportunities. And again, if you really can't do something, it's completely legitimate to say no. But understand that if you say no a bunch of times, pretty soon people won't ask you anymore, right? So there is a kind of downside. So you want to have balance. I would say again, get involved with other people different times. But I wouldn't have guessed, 16 years ago that by agreeing to come onto a committee for ISEP, I'd one day get to be their president. So that's pretty cool, right? And I'm glad I have the time and the support from my family and my chairman to be able to do that. I had to mention my chairman.
I won't belabor the point, but when you going back to the contracts and getting into hospitals, especially if it's a hospital that's got a lot of people that they're deciding from, you're looking for things that set you apart. So if you're active on a committee, and you know, it doesn't have to be a lot. I mean, I'm on the medical legal committee at ASAP, and we've got like 50 people on the committee, and only about 10 or 12 of them show up. Everybody else is like, hey, I'm on the medical legal committee, but that's something that sets them apart, even though they don't do anything. But it's just something, if you get involved, number one, it's something that sets you apart. Number two, you make a lot of great connections. I mean, I know people, like I've worked with residents, and I've worked with PA students that say, you know, I'm going to go to this hospital. I want to go to this hospital. This is really where I want to work. I know pretty much, I know most of the directors at most of the different hospitals just because I've worked with ISAP. And I always, and if they say, hey, here's where I want to go work, here's where I'm going to interview, I'll make a call ahead and say, hey, you know, this person's a good egg. Treat them with, you know, they'd be a good hire for you. Take a close look at them. And sometimes that's all it takes. I've done that a few times, and people have written me back and say, hey, thank you, I've got the job. So, but I wouldn't be able to do that if I'm just a guy that goes in and works my my 10 shifts a month and doesn't get involved. I wouldn't know all these people. So there's advantages to being involved, not just because it sets you apart, but there's advantages to being involved because of all the connections that you develop, both good and bad. So.
You know, it's been said that in order to keep yourself valuable, if you have a small group practice and you want to keep that contract, make yourself essential to the hospital. And so if you are going to be in an environment where you get to run the P&T committee, or you're sitting on PI, and you're really essential to the hospital, your group is essential to the hospital, boy, that buys you some rope if things ever get tough. And so to build on what you're saying, if you just go in and you work your shifts and you leave and you have no connection to the hospital community, then it makes things a little bit more tenuous.
Just a quick quote that I heard, I don't remember who said it, but they said when you get on staff at a hospital, there's 10 people there's 10 physicians that control the hospital. First you need to know who they are, then you need to become friends with them, and then you need to become one of them.
They need to take over.
this may be a pretty good segue into our next panel. I don't want to cut off, I'm not board certified either, so I don't want to cut anything.
Not a problem.
All right, let's give a round of applause.